Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Just a few minutes ago, we heard about UNICEF's efforts to help children around the world who are thrown into desperate circumstances not of their making. The young heroine of writer Jane Kelly's latest novel is also facing tough circumstances. 11-year-old Alia is fighting leukemia, but she's been weakened so much that it's hard for her to exert any effort to do just about anything. But a chance meeting with a precocious parrot shakes up her world. And it should be said, the parrot's world as well. The book is called The Desperate Adventures of Zeno and Alia, and Jane Kelly joined us in the studio to talk about it. Welcome back to Lake Effect.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, Mitch.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you as well. What got you interested in parrots?
Well, I happened to see an article by Dr. Pepperberg about her studies with the very famous Alex. And he is a very, very, or was, I should say, because he sadly died in 2007, a very, very smart bird. But she purchased him just almost randomly at a pet store outside of Chicago. And so he wasn't bred to be particularly brilliant, but it turned out that he was because he could identify shapes and colors and concepts like numbers. And he seemed to have an intelligence that went way beyond everyone's expectations. So that intrigued me.
Well, and in fact, you know, you think of how the term parrot is sometimes used, and it's really not necessarily a positive depiction. You know, when you say someone is parroting somebody else, they're just copying.
That's right. And that was part of the struggle that Dr. Pepperberg had to get people to fund her scientific research because they thought, well, what are you trying to study birds for? They have bird-sized brains. They aren't even as smart as dolphins. But she found that – I think she put Alex's intelligence at about the level of a 5-year-old human, but his emotional intelligence was about a 2-year-old.
Well, so you were thinking about parrots, but that doesn't necessarily automatically translate to a character in every author's mind. What got you wanting to get inside the head of a parrot?
Well, I think it had more to do with the amount of time that I spent thinking about them, which was just, you know, authors get obsessed by things, to be honest. And this was one of my obsessions. And I even considered the fact that I maybe would want to own a parrot. But then the more research I did about them, the more I realized that they were very difficult pets. You couldn't even really call them pets. And so I decided that I better sort of exercise my obsession in this fictional fashion, which was really a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed the time that I spent thinking about this character, Zeno.
Well, and so there is both a scientific basis for Zeno's ability to learn, but there's quite a lot that is speculative because none of us can actually know what's going on in the head of a parrot.
That's right. That's right. So for me, the key, I think, was when I read about one of Dr. Pepperberg's studies where she was trying to figure out basically how to teach Alex. And she discovered that he was motivated very much by the sense that someone else was learning more than he. So if he was not functioning in, you know, paying attention to the study, she would get one of her human assistants to come in, and the human assistant would do the task better than Alex, or sometimes worse, and Alex would just bristle and say, oh, well, he could do it as well, too. So once I understood that there really was an emotional component to the thinking that birds were doing, that really fascinated me, and that became an important part of what I imagined for my character.
Well, and so Zeno is a very self-focused parrot, which I think lines up with the idea of someone with fairly young emotional intelligence.
Yes. But I think also that I was, you know, well, let's just face it. We all know people who are really focused on how much they know and very arrogant about their intelligence, but they are not very sensitive to what other people are doing. And so I suppose Zeno was, in a way, my caricature of certain over-intellectuals who have very little wisdom. And so this is part of Zeno's journey, is that as he is forced out into the real world and he must encounter other kinds of birds and then humans, he must learn the wisdom of life experiences and not just rely upon his clever Greek phrases.
Well, it's striking that Zeno doesn't really grasp the concept of what a friend is.
That's true. He does not, even though he has quite a fondness for his owner. I should perhaps explain a little bit. The book begins as Zeno's owner, who is a professor of Greek literature, dies of a heart attack. And this propels Zeno out into the world. So he is close to his owner, but because the owner probably was a little bit like Zeno himself, a little less, his emotional intelligence was not as great as his academic intelligence. I think the two of them were just a couple of curmudgeons living in their library. And so Zeno didn't really have the kind of friendship that he ultimately in the course of the novel develops, first with a pigeon and then with the girl.
This seems like as good a time as any to hear a little bit, because the book opens with us getting to know Zeno.
All right. So this is the way the book begins. An alarm buzzed. A phone rang. Theme music from a news program played. A clock chimed 10, 11, 12, 13 times. The alarm buzzed again, louder and louder and louder. No one turned it off. No one got up and put food in the shiny aluminum bowl that was, alas, completely empty. The source of all these sounds rapped his beak on top of the bookcase. The house was silent for a moment, as if everything in it, even the walls of leather-bound books, hoped for a response. There was none. So the alarm buzzed, the phone rang, the music played, the clock chimed, the alarm buzzed, and a raucous voice proclaimed, "Zeno wants!" Zeno was an African gray parrot. He could imitate 63 sounds and speak 127 words. Since those two were by far his favorites, he repeated them again. "Zeno wants!" He flapped his gray wings and spread his tail that was as scarlet as the lining of a magician's cape. Then he flew over to the shiny aluminum bowl. He cocked his head to one side to see if his servant had filled it with food. There were no nuts, no fruits, no greens, nothing except Zeno's own reflection. He flew over to perch on the desk so he could look down at his servant. Dr. Agard was still sleeping on the floor. Zeno didn't understand this. Dr. Agard was a man of regular habits. He had never lain down on the floor for even a moment in the 20 years that he had been Zeno's servant. He had certainly never slept there. "Zeno wants!" And what did Zeno want? Since you are no doubt much better at understanding your feelings than poor Zeno, you know that Zeno wanted Dr. Agard to get up. He wanted the life they had shared for 20 years to continue. He wanted not to feel alone in the house. He wanted to be rid of that little throbbing knot of fear and dread in his stomach. He wanted...
"Banana nut!" Zeno squawked.
Well, he wasn't the only one who thought everything would be all right if he could just eat his favorite food.
Jane Kelly reading from The Desperate Adventures of Zeno and Alia. We find out that, of course, as you say, the person whom Zeno thinks of as his servant has died, and Zeno doesn't really grasp the concept of death early on very well. There's a character that knows only too well what death means. Where did Alia come from?
Alia is a young girl, and she has a kind of leukemia. I suppose she came most specifically from the fact that I have had cancer myself. And while I never really intend to write about cancer, because who wants to write about cancer, still I find that it has crept into various of my novels in different ways. And so I was particularly interested in the concept of identity, because for me, while I had cancer, that was the worst part, was the fact that no one saw me as myself anymore. They saw me as cancer patient, cancer victim, cancer survivor, but still someone who was pretty much defined by their illness. And that interested me. The other part that interested me was how easy it is to sort of slip into a very passive relationship with because the doctors are always telling you what to do. Everyone has all kinds of advice, and the person who is sick can sometimes start feeling like their will means nothing. And so Alia in this story has been having her treatments and lost a lot of her strength and has sort of sunk into her bed, and just which is very contrast from the Alia that she used to be, a very active soccer playing young girl, and she doesn't know who she is anymore. And then she has this encounter with Zeno when he pretty much randomly appears at her bedroom window because of the banana nut muffin.
Well, and you say she's lost much of her strength. She has also really lost much of her will.
Yes, yes. The two go hand in hand, I think, because, you know, if you don't get up and do things, you realize that you can't get up and do things. You know, we are what we do. And she has not been able to do much.
What is the challenge to you in writing about a life-threatening illness when your audience is so young?
Oh, it's very difficult because I was aware of the fact that some of the children who are reading this book might actually have such an illness or might know someone who have such an illness. And I did not want to alarm them. But on the other hand, I feel a responsibility to treat these sorts of subjects with a certain amount of realism because children know a great deal more than we give them credit for. So it's a fine line that one has to draw. And since it is a middle grade novel, it certainly has to have a happy ending. But I wanted to make sure that that was justified by the events within the book.
It seems like the audience that you're writing for is a really pivotal audience. I mean, this is, you know, the middle grades are a really formative set of years for kids.
Yes. That is why I love writing for middle grade, because it is a time of transition. Part of their lives are still very much in the worlds of imaginings and fancifulness, and yet they are starting to grapple with some very important issues that we, even as adults, struggle with. Questions of identity, questions of how do we find our way in the world? How do we choose our friends? How do we react when we lose our friends? And so the more fantastical elements, I wish that the children would continue to carry along with them, because I think even we as adults, they comfort us. The idea that the birds are all looking out for each other, which plays an important part of this book, well, that's not something that I could realistically know, but that's something that I, as an adult, certainly hope that the animals have community in the way that we have community.
I don't think it was you, but there was a middle grade author I interviewed who also pointed out that it's so much easier to write for kids when you don't have to include kissing in the story.
Well, if I hadn't said that, I certainly would say that because it's true. There doesn't have to be the issues like kissing or some of the more unpleasant aspects of being a teenager. We can sort of glide past those.
It's a different brand of angst.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Jane Kelly, thank you so much, and congratulations on another wonderful novel.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Milwaukee area native Jane Kelly is the author of three novels for young readers, the latest of which is called The Desperate Adventures of Zeno and Alia, and there is a link to more about it from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One last break, and then an essayist has some thoughts on how to get through the cabin fever that starts to build this time of year. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.